Hi, I'm Brian McCreath, and this is The Answered Question from WCRB in Boston for November 17th, 2017.
Tonight, tonight, it all began tonight. I saw you, and the world went away. Tonight, tonight.
This probably isn't something that needs an introduction, but just in case, this is Tonight, from Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story, from the original Broadway cast album. You'll hear a lot of Bernstein in the coming year for the centennial of Lenny's birth, and that includes Tanglewood in a very big way. The entire summer season of the Boston Symphony is built around Bernstein's music and his legacy as a performer and teacher. And among the many highlights is West Side Story, in a presentation of the 1961 film with live orchestral accompaniment by the BSO. You'll hear about that and much more on this podcast with Tony Fogg, the director of Tanglewood and the artistic administrator of the BSO. The Boston Symphony just got back from a short tour of Japan, so we'll be live on the air tomorrow night at 8 p.m. for their first program back at Symphony Hall. Andres Nelsons conducts Mahler's First Symphony and Beethoven's Third Piano Concerto with soloist Martin Helmschen. And on Sunday night, Chris Voss brings you WCRB in concert with the Boston Early Music Festival, featuring Andre Compra's opera The Carnival of Venice. That's at 7 p.m. Sunday, and you'll find it on demand at our website, classicalwcrb.org, the next day. The BSO program for this week was originally scheduled to be conducted by Christoph von Dohnányi, but unfortunately medical issues forced him to cancel. But we'll still hear the soloist who was scheduled for this week, Martin Helmschen, who's a protege of Dohnányi. Helmschen played Beethoven's Emperor Concerto with Dohnányi and the BSO a couple of years ago, so when I talked to him after a rehearsal in the hall yesterday, I asked him where the piece he's playing this week, Beethoven's Third Piano Concerto, fits into his own repertoire.
Well, I do play all the Beethoven concertos a lot, have played them a lot by now. But amongst them, number three, I'd say, is the one I've played the least, actually. Especially in my generation at university, at study times, it used to be the most popular concerto, also at competitions and for exams. Everybody seemed to play number three. So maybe that was, I don't know, a typical kind of reaction for myself to say, well, I'd rather explore the others first, but have come to really, really love it as dearly as the others. Not only as a listener, which is the case anyway, because I grew up with this concerto and great recordings, but also as a performer.
Were there particular recordings or teachers that unlocked parts of the Beethoven Third for you that really kind of opened the piece to you?
I'd say very influential recordings were Wilhelm Kempf and Emil Gilels, which is kind of my background, German and Russian, which is where I come from. I've had a Russian teacher for almost 10 years, which was a very strong influence, was very influenced by all the great Russian pianists. And then actually later on, more by the Austro-Germanic tradition. And I'd have to also mention Alfred Brendel's name in that context, because for Beethoven in general, he was also a major, major influence and teacher to me.
Well, and, you know, citing influences is kind of nice as context, but of course, you have your voice with this piece. And I think it feels like to me, musicians always have moments in the pieces they play that are sort of the ones they totally own and have from the very beginning. Are there moments in the Third Piano Concerto that you've always felt completely at home with and instinctively comfortable with?
Well, talking about moments and pieces is a little two-sided emotionally for me, because, for instance, sometimes we get this compliment, wow, there have been beautiful moments, and that's always a compliment which I don't like particularly. So also from the composer's perspective, for such a masterwork, I feel a little cautious talking too much about the incredible moments. Yet, having said that, in that particular piece, I feel there are these two moments that always come to my mind first when I go back to practicing that piece again, and when I think about it, that Beethoven himself highlights in a particular way by marking this very, very special pedal mark. It's something that he has done before and will do later on, but I feel that here in the end of the first movement after the cadenza and in the beginning of the second movement, there are particularly striking moments that he himself probably will have thought this is probably something like the heart of the piece, because the pedal is clearly written in a way that it should blur different harmonies together. So this is something that nobody ever has done before. It's very much his own invention. And these moments just make the one in the first movement just makes your blood freeze, yeah, when the orchestra and the timpani come back after the cadenza. It feels like a prolonged cadenza, actually. And then the beginning of the second movement is divine in a certain way, kind of outer space-ish in feeling, I would say. That also is so ahead of what anything that has been composed before. So I can't help thinking of these two moments in particular when I think about that concerto.
That's great. Those special things to listen for like that. I'm always fascinated with performers' relationship to Beethoven. Well, anybody's relationship to Beethoven, because there are ways that his music touches people in different ways. Mm-hmm. His own personality encompassed such a broad range of character. Mm-hmm. Is there one side of Beethoven that you naturally relate to more than another side of Beethoven?
Well, I feel that I don't know if it's cheap to say the C minor home ground of Beethoven, it is very much true that this is probably, there is a certain expression that he uses the C minor key for, which is very, very much his own, and which is very much one of the first things we associate with Beethoven. You're very right in saying the scope is so broad, the range of expression and forms and everything. I've just played, for instance, lots of variations, recorded the Diabelli variations, played a lot the variations for cello and piano, and they are so humorous and witty that it's like so far away actually from the world of the C minor concerto, although there is wit as well in the end of the third movement, for instance. But still, it's in a way the C minor darkness and this kind of confessional feeling that it's the man, Beethoven, who speaks. And this is the thing he needs to express, that needs to be expressed to the world, that nobody has ever said before. This, to me, comes across as particularly striking, this individual power in the C minor works, like in the Fifth Symphony, for instance. And also, I think the Third Piano Concerto, in a way, very much stands for that, always combined with the most tender and gentle side themes or second movements, which is so typical for Beethoven.
Your wife, Marie Elizabeth Hecker, a terrific cellist, you've recorded some things with her. Two recordings I'm aware of are Brahms and Schubert. What about those composers made them the ones you wanted to collaborate with her on a recording? And are there other projects that we can look forward to from the two of you?
Yes, we have now played most of the cello repertoire, the common repertoire, and also lots of lesser known pieces for many, many years, for more than 10 years, regularly together. So the plan is to step by step record most of them, because it's such a big part of our musical life, and we've been such a strong influence to each other that it would be a shame not to document this collaboration. So the next thing will most likely be Russian repertoire. And the choice of Schubert and Brahms was kind of a no-brainer decisions, because these are very much core works for the piano and cello repertoire, and they have both been the start of the repertoire that we worked on, as I said, many years ago. So it was just about time to release them.
And I couldn't remember from the last time we talked. Have you worked with Andres before?
Yes, we actually have worked before. It's particularly interesting that we've done the Mozart C minor concerto before, which is very much a clear predecessor to this Beethoven concerto. And Beethoven said remarkable things about it. He said to a composer colleague that we will never be able to write anything like that. That's what he said about the Mozart C minor concerto. So I would say he has come pretty far himself. So there was something that Beethoven was very much, I would say, obsessed with also in Mozart's music and in what Mozart had expressed in the C minor key. So it definitely didn't come from scratch, like with any great composer or great artist. They were always very influenced of what was there before. So for me particularly, it's an interesting journey to continue the collaboration with Andres with the other great C minor concerto.
Well, Martin Helmschmidt, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Great pleasure. Thank you.
Martin Helmschmidt is the soloist in Beethoven's third piano concerto with the Boston Symphony and conductor Andres Nelsons. You'll hear them live on the radio and streaming online at classicalwcrb.org this Saturday at 8 p.m. Yesterday, the Boston Symphony announced its plans for the 2018 summer season at Tanglewood. The centerpiece of the season is August 25th, 2018, Bernstein's 100th birthday. And on that Saturday next summer, the BSO will put on a gala concert hosted by Audra McDonald. Five conductors will take part, including Andres Nelsons, Keith Lockhart, Christoph Eschenbach, Michael Tilson Thomas, and John Williams. Along with the BSO, members of the New York Philharmonic, Vienna Philharmonic, and Israel Philharmonic will perform, as well as musicians from the Tanglewood Music Center Orchestra, Pacific Music Festival, and the Schleswig-Holstein Festival. It'll be a huge night. But while that one event will get a ton of attention, the vast majority of the rest of the season is also driven by Bernstein. Every week features programs related in some way to Lenny, including a lot of major productions. You can see the major highlights at our website, classicalwcrb.org. Well, earlier this week, I talked about all of it with Tony Fogg, the director of Tanglewood and the BSO's artistic administrator, and I asked him if there's ever been a Tanglewood season so completely focused on one individual.
I can't speak for every Tanglewood season, Brian, but certainly in the years that I've been associated with the planning of the festival, which are now 23 summers, and looking a little further back into the history, there hasn't been quite anything like this. I think in summer of 1991, we may have done something of a survey of Mozart piano concertos for the Mozart anniversary. But that was a very specific thread of a composer whose output was vast. Bernstein's output, by contrast, is not huge. When you look at it, and when you look at the history of his compositions, there are long periods where he was clearly struggling with the creative urge. And so there are, of course, a number of large-scale landmark pieces, but they're not limitless in number. So our approach to the Bernstein celebration has been partly to be as comprehensive within limits as we possibly can be. And so I think looking across the entirety of the season, I hope we've given a fair representation of Bernstein in all genres, whether they be in the works for the theatre, the concert hall, chamber music, a representation of his approach to programming, and some sense of Bernstein, the humanitarian, Bernstein, the educationalist, very importantly.
But that's the fascinating thing about Bernstein as a character, right? That he did compose, but he was, in a way, I never had the chance to meet him, but he was torn between his urges to conduct and be on stage and that urge to be alone. And it was as I've heard the stories, it was almost torture to him to have to be pulled in both of those directions. And so what's interesting about the season you've constructed is that you have acknowledged that conducting and performing side through individual works that he himself was associated with.
If you look at the programs that he conducted in Tanglewood over the years, the programs that he conducted elsewhere, obviously very importantly with the New York Philharmonic, the pieces that he recorded, it does give a sense. There are some clear focuses of composers and of particular pieces that keep coming back or that were obviously the concentration at any one particular period in his work as a conductor. So we've tried as best we can, without forcing the matter, to include a good cross-section of those pieces. So, you know, major symphonies like Tchaikovsky Fifth or the Copland Third or the Sibelius Second or Prokofiev Fifth or the Mahler Third, et cetera, have become the sort of keystones. Where possible, we try to direct the repertoire selection of certain soloists towards pieces that are Bernstein associated. For instance, we have Maniacs playing the G major concerto, Kerschel 453, Garrick Olson playing the Jeu d'Homme, Kerschel 271, both of which were among the handful of Mozart concertos that Bernstein played, and two of the concertos that he played at Tanglewood. So I think with a little finessing, we're hoping to give a good representation of the world of Bernstein through the other composers of which he was a champion. And it's not in any way to ask people to remember back to those performances if they were lucky enough to be there themselves and say, oh, how did this contemporary performance compare with Bernstein's? Not at all. But it's just to give a sort of a texture, a context of the music that Bernstein was clearly thinking about and involved in, and help understand his musical point of view, but also help inform the music that he wrote. And we hope that this fills out the picture in another sense as well, apart from just having as many and as varied a range of Bernstein pieces as we could manage to fit into the schedule.
So I want to come back to those pieces that he performed a lot, not written by him, in just a minute. But first, I just want to look at those pieces by Bernstein that are included in the season. And I sort of look at the schedule and I think of some of these that are just inevitable. If you do a season, a summer of Bernstein, you have to include them. I think West Side Story has to be done. Candide has to be done. Maybe even Chichester Psalms has to be done. Another two or three that's totally up to an individual's judgment. But once you get past what you believe are the essential Bernstein, how did you even wrestle with the rest of the catalog? You say it's maybe not as vast as someone like Mozart, but there is a lot to choose from. How did you judge which pieces to include?
Well, we actually took the long view of the entirety of the Bernstein centennial season, so the 1718 season. So we were able to look at the programming for Boston alongside the programming for Tanglewood. And so, without question, Bernstein's greatest engagement with the BSO was at Tanglewood over a 50-year period. He appeared less frequently here in Symphony Hall. So we wanted to somehow reflect that balance. The simple solution for the Boston subscription season was to essentially program the three works that he wrote for the BSO: the Divertimento, which was performed on opening night, and then the second and third symphonies, which we have in consecutive weeks in March. And we thought that was a sort of contained and elegant way to reflect Bernstein's relationship with the BSO. When it came to Tanglewood, we wanted to have a far more comprehensive look at it. I think you're absolutely right that there were certain pieces that one just had to include in a Bernstein celebration. How can you celebrate a composer like this without including some of West Side Story or Candide? So they were givens. But then we started to think about how the balance of the rest would work. And so we made a decision to try and make one of the threads of the programming as varied a range of works for the theater as we could, because Bernstein is one of the principal composers for the theater of the 20th century. So we have the two operas, Trouble in Tahiti and A Quiet Place, both in very interesting smaller versions. Two ballets. We have Facsimile, which is being done purely as a concert piece by the TMC Orchestra. We have Fancy Free, which we're very, very happily doing in collaboration with the Boston Ballet. This is the original Jerome Robbins choreography. So we have two dance pieces. We have On the Town, which is alongside West Side Story, Bernstein's most successful musical. And then Candide, which we do in a version featuring the Knights in Ozawa Hall, and West Side Story itself, not in a version with live singers, but in the very successful recent creation of the much acclaimed movie with live orchestra. And this is a presentation that we've done before, and it is utterly thrilling.
It really is. It was
unbelievable.
Among the most memorable things.
Among the most memorable things, and among the greatest playing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And that, from the BSO, that's a pretty high standard.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So we wanted to have a good cross-section of the works for the theatre, and I'm very pleased that we've got various genres. And then to complement, you know, the concert pieces that we have here in Boston, we wanted to look beyond that. So a number of works involving soloists or other forces. So we have Halil, the late piece for flute and orchestra, the Serenade for violin and orchestra. Have the very late opening prayer, the benediction for orchestra. We have the Divertimento, which was a piece written for the BSO Centennial. So I think a good complement to the two symphonies that we're playing during the subscription year. And then beyond that, a healthy selection of chamber music and song and so forth. So it's pretty evenly spread chronologically throughout the season. I think it's a very good representation of Bernstein's various periods of creativity, including what we think was the very last piece he ever wrote, which was a chamber work for flute and cello called A Variations on Octatonic Scale that was actually premiered in a concert at Tanglewood in 1995 with Yo-Yo Ma and Dorio Dwyer. And we believe that was the last piece that Bernstein completed. So it's right from, you know, the work of the 40s through to the very last pieces. So it's as broad an array as we could possibly conceive.
And so since you've been so immersed in all of that, those decades of pieces, do you think there are one or two or maybe even three threads of commonality that run through Bernstein's work? I mean, what makes any of the pieces that we're talking about definitively Bernstein? What do you hear when you hear a piece and you say, well, that sounds like Bernstein?
You only need to listen to about 15 seconds of any Bernstein piece, and I think the orchestration, beyond anything, is absolutely identifiable. He has just a way of writing for the orchestra in particular, the voicing, the way the colors are blended, the separation of the various families of instruments. It's like a thumbprint that is consistent right throughout his music. There's also this sort of rhythmic vitality, which is so individual. And you hear a piece and you think, oh God, yes, that's got to be Bernstein. He's the worst in the world for creating those wretched earworms. You know, a little tiny snippet of something or other that, it might be a 30-second passage and it just lasts in your ears and in your brain for the next 5 days and you're going crazy with it. So, you know, there is the memorability and the instant absorption factor of a lot of Bernstein's music, which I think is hard to deny.
The rhythmic thing, it makes me instantly think of how with Dvorak, there's a rhythmic element to Dvorak that I think is so identifiable right away. Even if it's not a Dvorak piece, you know, you sense what his sense of rhythm is. And I guess that's kind of what you mean with it's not the same rhythmic imprint. It's a very different one.
No, but it is, it's like the timbre of one on someone's voice or their, handshake or the handwriting, it's that sort of thing. Yeah.
Now, do you think, this is sort of a follow-up and gets back to all those pieces that Bernstein was so well known for performing, his favorite pieces, like the ones that you've programmed, Shostakovich 5, Tchaikovsky 5, the Mozart concertos that you mentioned. Do you feel like there's a connection to those particular threads of his compositional life? Are those also found in those pieces he favored as a performer? Is there something in common there, or is that just reaching too far into something, trying to grasp for relationships?
I think that would be maybe forcing comparisons in a certain way, but it's more to do, especially in the latter couple of decades of his work, his awareness of social issues. And one of the things that we're doing this summer that I'm very pleased because it does give a context, another dimension to the musical performances, is that we've asked Michael Tilson Thomas, who of course was one of Bernstein's closest colleagues, to create some sort of colloquium, if that's the right word, that we look at Bernstein as a commentator on the social dimensions of his time and how through Bernstein's own words and by extension through his music, he commented on certain aspects of society at the time. Perhaps the most specific example of this is the work called Songfest, which is for six solo voices and orchestra. One of the pieces written for the American Bicentennial, and Bernstein selected a range of American poetry, both contemporary and older poetry, which somehow to him spoke to his vision of what American society was at the time. And it's a very, very powerful and very important piece. As a parallel to that, we've commissioned Michael Gandolfi to write a new iteration of Songfest. Not that we're expecting him to call it Songfest 2 or anything, but we've asked Michael to write a sort of parallel work for six voices and orchestra, choosing poetry, something which somehow encapsulates Michael's own views of our society today in all of its wild dimensions. And I'd be really fascinating to see what he selects and the nature of that piece. That's going to be a project for the Tanglewood Music Centre, vocal fellows and orchestra, and I think will be a very elegant way into this whole subject of Bernstein as being like a key to his time and our time.
Well, I'm really interested to hear how the MTT colloquium develops. I think Bernstein's music says so much, but to also bring people's thoughts literally to, you know, in their words to the stage is also going to be a really valuable thing.
Well, we have a lot of Bernstein in words. Perhaps the most extensive and the one that most people will know would be his presentations of the Young People's Concerts, which took place between 1958 and 1972. So this was thinking about music and about the philosophy of music that reached literally millions of people. So a lot of us already have that as a sort of soundtrack in our lives. But there are many addresses that, spoken addresses that Bernstein gave during his life. There's some wonderful collections of his correspondence, and you learn so much about his character and personality, as well as his thoughts about what is going on in the musical world, in society, as well as his own life through those letters. So fortunately, there's a lot that we have to work from, and Michael Tilson Thomas's ideas that all of those will be the starting point for an exposé. We've got a lot of work to do to get this to a final form, and Michael is never short on ideas. It's exhilarating working with him.
Yeah.
And we look forward to all of us putting this together with him for the weekend that he's with us in August.
And you have a version of a Young People's Concert with Jamie Bernstein.
We do. And this was an important decision in our scheduling. We decided to forego one of our typical BSO presentations and do a special tailor-made shortened program just for young audiences and their families. And we're calling it a Young People's Concert, as the Bernstein concerts were. The Young People's Concerts, as everyone knew them, tended to focus on one particular theme or subject per program. These will be a little more generalist because we only have one evening. Andres will be conducting. We've invited, as you mentioned, Jamie Bernstein to be the host and moderator and talk us through the evening. But we hope that the spirit of this program will be very much akin to the spirit of those programs of Bernstein himself. And we hope that this will be of great appeal to those who may have seen the programs when they were current, and their families and kids and grandkids, et cetera, et cetera.
There are so many musicians I've talked to over the years who look on those concerts, on those presentations, whether on TV or at the hall in New York, as absolutely formative to how they understand music in general. So it's great as a tribute. Outside of the Bernstein realm, there's still even more of Tanglewood, and the Koussevitzky artist for 2018 is Kirill Gerstein. And he's someone who I find to be just electrifying as a performer. There's a sort of crackle on the stage when he's performing. But I that's my impression. I wonder, from your point of view, what it is about Kirill that is special, and what people expect or can expect in the projects he'll do over, I think, four programs during the summer.
Kirill's got this incredible wide range of interests musically, and an unbelievable worldview when it comes to musical styles. And what appealed to us about Kirill as being the Koussevitzky artist was that he somehow continued something of Koussevitzky's spirit, in that he, regarded new music just as importantly as old music. He represents the next generation of intellectually curious musicians with fantastic versatility. So all of those elements pointed to him to be an ideal nominee for this title. As you mentioned, he's doing four different projects, and in a way, they couldn't be more different. I guess at the most traditional end, he's doing a performance of Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto, which he plays marvelously with Charles Dutoit. He's also performing Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, which is a reflection of his own roots as a jazz player. But he's collaborating with our artistic partner, Thomas Addis, on two important programs. Firstly, with the TMC Orchestra as part of the Festival of Contemporary Music, he'll be playing Tom's In 7 Days, which is a concerto in all but title. And then he and Tom are giving a two-piano recital, absolutely fascinating program, as one would expect from two such thoughtful and imaginative musicians, which includes some real rarities. A transcription by Shostakovich, for instance, of Stravinsky's Symphony of Psalms, a Koussevitzky commission, of course. This is a work that I sort of vaguely knew existed. But as well, there's some music of Debussy, of Lutosławski, a really fascinating program, as well as...
I think Tom's music is Tom, as well as...
Tom's own music, yeah. From a concert paraphrase for two pianos from Powder Her Face. So amazing, amazing program. So in the matter of about 2 weeks, we'll see these various facets of Kirill's artistry, and I think it'll be an exciting journey for all of us to be with him.
And then one of the things I notice about the schedule is that I don't think there's anyone as a conductor who's visiting Tanglewood for the first time. And so what stands out to me is that there's actually a couple of concerts with Herbert Blomstedt and a couple with Charles Dutoit. Christoph Eschenbach returns. And I guess I wonder from you work with these people on a daily basis. You hear concerts both here in Boston and elsewhere all the time. And I wonder what your thoughts are right now about what that generation of conductors brings certainly to the BSO, but especially to the TMC Orchestra. What do the young musicians of the TMC Orchestra get from conductors of that generation who, for whom, just as a point of reference, you know, World War II was a living memory, and the immediate post-war era was something that was their experience?
The art of a conductor is a completely mysterious one. And not only does a conductor bring immense knowledge of the musical score, and in the case of Herbert Blomstedt, we have someone who's deeply steeped in the sort of Central European Austro-Germanic tradition in a way that very few are today. So he already comes along with that set of unbelievable skills, musical skills to offer. But he just has a sort of this life aura about him that is as much an influence on the players as anything. And I think that's one of the mysteries of conducting, that, you know, without doing anything, a conductor can somehow affect the approach of the musicians, change the sound of an orchestra, all of those. So with these great, wonderful senior conductors that we have, not only have this sort of deep commitment to a particular thread of programming that they have refined and defined over the course of the decades of their career, but you have this great humanity as well, which, especially when it comes to working with our young musicians, is an absolutely potent experience for them, that one that can't be duplicated in any way. And that's the sort of mixture of experiences that we try to provide for the TMC fellows each year. Alongside those, and this is focusing on the TMC just for the moment, they have three different concerts with Andrus, which is in itself a hair-raising experience in the most wonderful sense. You know, working with Andrus is just to be completely electrified in your music making and be completely enveloped by his energy. And I think the experience of the fellows over the last few years of working with him have been undeniably that, and we're so pleased that he's going to be with us for about 5 weeks this summer. So that's it's wonderful commitment from Andrus, and I can't wait to hear all of the various pieces that he'll be doing with the TMC and with the BSO.
Well, yeah, I mean, Andrus, I did notice there's a he's doing a lot. I mean, I think it's 13 programs overall. If I think that includes film night, which he's not conducting the entire film night evening, but then there's also other conductors. Not to take anything away from Bramwell Tovey or from Juanjo Mena. I'm sure I'm leaving out someone, but you know, there's also electricity and excitement with those guys too. But that older generation is I just find, you know, especially now, I mean, in this year, in this time, to be especially precious, you know, that those guys are with us and able to be with, as I say, not just the BSO, but with the TMC students. Andrus is on that exciting end of things, bringing a couple of the Shostakovich symphonies to numbers 5 and 4 to Tanglewood, and that's great to see. The opera that he's conducting, La Boheme, other than, as I understand it, the fact that this was one of Bernstein's more favorite operas and one of the few that he recorded, what other reasons led you to La Boheme for an opera experience at Tanglewood this summer?
We thought it'd be a lot of fun, and we thought everyone would enjoy it. And last summer, very memorably, we did Das Rheingold, mm-hmm. and we wanted an operatic presentation that would be in many ways a strong contrast to that. And Boheme seemed to be the perfect candidate. We had looked at another couple of options for that slot. And then the fact that it was a piece that Bernstein loved right throughout his career, and as you say, Brian recorded it towards the end of his life, was just enough of a nudge in one direction for us to decide to go with that piece. And we've put together, I think, a really wonderful cast, international singers and some fine Americans, and I think it'll be great fun, and in the context of everything we're doing, I think is a nice foil to some of the other offerings. If I can just go back one little step, you mentioned the two Shostakovich symphonies, numbers
yeah.
4 and 5. Number 5 is, in fact, the program which includes number 5 is, in its entirety, is the Brahms first piano concerto and then the Shostakovich fifth. And that was, in fact, the first complete program that Bernstein ever conducted with the BSO, which happened in Providence, I believe, and then came to Symphony Hall. He'd done some part programs before that, shared with Koussevitzky, but this was the first one that they entrusted to him in his entirety, and so we thought it was worthy of repetition in its original configuration. And of course, Shostakovich 5 has become one of our calling cards, and the Fourth Symphony is a piece that we'll be playing quite a number of times this season, taking to Carnegie Hall and then taking to Europe on tour. So we wanted to have a chance to present it to our Tanglewood audiences as well.
And recording it,
yes, yeah. It's an absolutely marvelous, amazing piece. So
it is, yeah.
It'll be great.
Yeah, yeah. Tony, thanks for talking through so much about the 2018 Tanglewood season. It's as always, it's deep and it's fascinating and a lot to look forward to. But this time, especially as a Bernstein celebration, just seems like a unique opportunity. So thanks for taking time to talk about it.
My pleasure, Brian.
Tony Fogg is the director of Tanglewood and the artistic administrator of the Boston Symphony. And again, you'll find more of the major highlights of the 2018 Tanglewood season when you go to classicalwcrb.org. You can subscribe to The Answered Question at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. TAQ is also on SoundCloud and at that website, classicalwcrb.org. Thank you to Martin Helmshin and Tony Fogg, as well as the rest of the staff of the Boston Symphony, for making these conversations possible. I'm Brian McCreath. Thanks for listening.